First Break All the Rules, Disc 7.
Keys of your own. Can an employee turn these keys? No manager can make an employee productive. Managers are catalysts. They can speed up the reaction between the talent of the employee and the needs of the customer or company. They can help the employee find his path of least resistance toward his goals. They can help the employee plan his career. But they cannot do any of these without a major effort from the employee. In the world according to great managers, the employee is the star. The manager is the agent. And as in the world of performing arts, the agent expects a great deal from his stars. This is what great managers expect of every talented employee. Look in the mirror any chance you get. Use any feedback tools provided by the company to increase your understanding of who you are and how others perceive you. Muse. Sit down for 20 or 30 minutes each month and play the last few weeks back in your mind. What did you accomplish? What did you learn? What did you hate? What did you love? What does all of this say about you and your talents? Discover yourself. Over time, become more detailed in your description of your skills, knowledge, and talents. Use this increasingly deep understanding to volunteer for the right roles, to be a better partner, to guide your training and development choices. Build your constituency. Over time, identify which kinds of relationships tend to work well for you. Seek them out. Keep track. Build your own record of your learnings and discoveries. Catch your peers doing something right. When you enter your place of work, you never leave it at zero. You either make it a little better or a little worse. Make it a little better. So you work for a disciple of conventional wisdom, or worse. Great managers are still a minority. Few employees are lucky enough to work for a super supervisor, the perfect balancer of warmth and drive, support, and authority, a manager who understands them, accepts them in all of their imperfection, and knows just how to energize them on even the most sluggish of mornings. Instead, most employees work for a supervisory work in progress, a manager who genuinely wants to treat his people well, who genuinely wants them to excel, but who is still struggling to get it right. Maybe he spends too much time telling his people what to do and not enough time listening to the unique needs of each person. Maybe he wants to perfect his people by making them learn his way of doing things. Maybe he naively treats everyone the way he would like to be treated. Maybe he is well-intentioned, but too busy to find the time to talk with all employees about their performance. Or maybe he is less well-intentioned. Maybe he dislikes people, distrusts them, takes credit for their successes, and blames them for his failures. If you work for any one of these managers, what can you do? What can you do to help him or her make the most of you? While we cannot offer you a surefire solution, we can give you a few pointers for managing your manager. A. If your manager is just too busy to talk with you about your performance or your goals, schedule a performance planning meeting with him. Remove the planning burden from his shoulders and tell him that you will provide the structure for the meeting in advance so that you can use your time together most efficiently. You will prepare a short review of the last 3 months, the actions you took, the discoveries you made, the new partnerships you built. You will then want to discuss with him the next 3 months, specifically your main focus, the new discoveries you want to make, and the new relationships you want to build. All he has to do is show up to the meeting and focus on you for 45 minutes. If he consistently cancels the scheduled meeting or has nothing to say to you during the meeting, then your problem is not that he is too busy. Your problem is that he is a poor manager. Faced with this problem, you are limited in your options. If you love the job itself and feel you are doing well, you may simply have to put up with him. The alternative is to make a move, which we will discuss in item E. B. If your manager forces you to do things her way, she is probably focusing on process too much. Pick your moment, perhaps during your performance planning meeting, and tell her that you want to define your role more by its outcomes than by its steps. Ask her which outcomes she would use to measure your success. As you discuss this, describe for her how your style, although different from hers, will still enable you to achieve the outcomes expected of you. Your point here is not to persuade her that your style is better than hers. Your point is simply that your style is the most efficient way for you to reach the outcomes on which you and she have agreed. When viewed through this lens, her style, no matter how sensible it might seem to her, really does not apply. Of course, a misfocus on steps rather than outcomes may not be the problem. She may be forcing you to do things her way because she likes this feeling of power and control. If you can adapt to her style without compromising your integrity, fine. Otherwise, you may wish to make a move to another job. C. If your manager praises you inappropriately or at inappropriate times, you can suggest alternatives. This isn't always an easy conversation. In fact, telling your manager that you much prefer to be praised in private rather than in public can sometimes feel arrogant and presumptuous. Once again, you have to pick your moment. It would probably be neither wise nor sensitive to correct him immediately after he had the whole team stand up and cheer your success. Mark D., the insurance agent from Chapter 5, certainly woke his manager up by storming off the stage, but we wouldn't recommend this approach. Instead, make your comments at a time when you are discussing all aspects of your performance, perhaps during the structured, dispassionate setting of a performance planning meeting, and it would not hurt to thank him for his good intentions. This will show him that you have thought carefully about what you need from him and will give him a chance to assimilate what you told him into the way he manages you. If the problem is less that he gives you the wrong kind of praise and more that he gives you no praise at all, you will need to survive for as long as possible on your own reserves. If you are a natural self-starter, you may find that you can survive adequately for quite a while without any recognition at all. Most people, though, will soon feel a drain on their energy. Faced with the prospect of a recognitionless environment, you may wish to consider a move. D. If your manager constantly asks you questions about how you are doing and feeling or otherwise intrudes, suggest that you don't find this helpful. It is a delicate matter because you don't want to seem insubordinate or as if you are his manager, but ask if it would be okay if you check in with him less frequently than he obviously wants to check in with you. Tell him that it is no reflection on him. Say that you are hoping to function a little more independently, and that if you can schedule a check-in meeting on your cycle rather than his, then you will probably be able to be a great deal more productive. Obviously, it is a sensitive situation, but if you use unambiguous, unemotional terminology like, "I like to check in every couple of weeks rather than every couple of days," you should be able to handle it and come to some practical arrangements that work for both of you. If your manager is intruding because he is suspicious of you, the most unambiguous, unemotional terminology will be of little help. You will have to resort to a different strategy, a move. E. If the problems we have discussed are of an altogether different nature, which is to say, if your manager consistently ignores you, distrusts you, takes credit for your work, blames you for his mistakes, or disrespects you, then get out from under him. You might look for a lateral move or another position within the company, or you might simply leave. Yes, you might decide to stick it out for 6 months in the hope that he will leave. Yes, the generous company benefits might dull your pain enough to make your situation tolerable. Yes, you might be able to find a sympathetic ear with your manager's boss or with the human resources department. But don't fool yourself. If his behavior has been consistent over time, he is not going to change that much. Some managers simply should not be managers. Their misbehavior is not a function of misunderstandings or misdirected good intentions. It is a function of lack of talent, or sometimes neurosis. Lacking the appropriate four-lane highways in their mind, they will forever make poor decisions. They will forever mistrust, overshadow, abandon, intrude, and stifle. They have to. It's in their nature. Neither you nor this book nor weeks of sensitivity training will give them the strengths, the self-esteem, and the security they need to be a great manager. We would like to be able to tell you, don't worry, soldier on, rely on the strength of your own talent and you will still excel. But we cannot. You might be able to survive your predicament for a while in the hope that the manager will prove his own undoing and get fired. But lacking a good manager, you won't be able to last long. As this book has shown, in your struggle to turn all of your talents into performance, your immediate manager is a very important partner. If you are cursed with a truly bad one, then you will never see the best of you. No matter how much you enjoy the job itself, get out, fast. You deserve better. Master Keys. What can the company do to create a friendly climate for great managers? We have said that an employee may join a company because of its prestige and reputation, but that his relationship with his immediate manager determines how long he stays and how productive he is while he is there. We have said that the manager is the critical player in turning each employee's talent into performance. We have said that managers trump companies. All this is true. From the employee's perspective, the manager is indeed more influential than the company. However, the company still wields enormous power. By themselves, great managers can offer limited local resistance to conventional wisdom. Only a total company effort can dislodge it completely. In most companies, conventional wisdom remains deeply entrenched. Even though many managers might disagree with some of its central tenets, each person has unlimited potential, help each person to overcome his weaknesses, treat others as you would like to be treated, still these tenets survive. They are held firmly in place by a network of policies, practices, and languages. This network pervades the company, affecting the way employees are selected, trained, paid, punished, and promoted. By themselves, great managers can make small advances in the opposite direction, but they can never break all the way through to the other side. No matter which route they try, sooner or later they open a door and find conventions standing there with some policy or rule or system that stops the great manager in his tracks. You can't pay people that way. You can't promote him if he doesn't have more than 3 years' experience. You're not treating every employee the same. That's unfair. Here's our new performance management system. Make sure every employee is trained on every one of these competencies. You can't give her that title. She doesn't have anyone reporting to her. Conventional wisdom is barricaded behind a wall of selection, training, compensation, and performance management systems. The only way to dislodge it completely is to replace these systems. And only the company can replace these systems. Using the four keys as our guide, here are some of the master keys that the senior management of a company can use to break through conventional wisdom's barricades. A. Keep the focus on outcomes. The role of the company is to identify the desired end. The role of the individual is to find the best means possible to achieve that end. Therefore, strong companies become experts in the destination and give the individual the thrill of the journey. As much as is possible, define every role using outcome terms. Find a way to rate, rank, or count as many of those outcomes as possible. Measurement always improves performance. The four most important emotional outcomes for a customer are accuracy, availability, partnership, and advice. Examine each role within the company and identify what actually needs to happen to create these outcomes. In training classes, explain how the standardized steps of the role lead to one or more of these emotional outcomes. Also explain where, how, and why employees are expected to use their discretion to create these outcomes. Hold managers accountable for their employees' responses to the 12 questions presented in Chapter 1. These 12 questions are a very important outcome measure. Although we would not advise paying managers on their employees' responses, managers should use the 12 questions as part of their overall performance scorecard. B. Value world-class performance in every role. At strong companies, every role performed at excellence is respected. If you want to understand the culture of a company, look first to its heroes. Within as many roles as possible, set up different levels of achievement. Identify specific criteria for moving up from one level to the next. Reward progress with plaques, certificates, and diplomas. Take every level seriously. Within as many roles as possible, set up broad-banded compensation plans. Identify specific criteria for moving up within each band. Explain clearly the reason for the pay cut when shifting from one band to another. Celebrate personal bests. Many people like to compete with themselves. Design a system so that each person can keep track of his or her performance monthly or quarterly. Use this system to celebrate monthly or quarterly personal bests as and when they occur. A growing number of personal bests means a growing company. C. Study your best. Strong companies learn from their very best. Internal best practice discovery is one of their most important rituals. Start with your most significant roles and study your best practitioners. Build a talent profile for each role. This will help you select more people like your best. Revise all training to incorporate what you have learned about excellence in each role. set up an internal university. The main function of this university should be to provide a forum for showcasing how your best, in every role, do what they do. As far as is possible, every employee should be exposed to the thinking, the actions, and the satisfactions of your best in every role. Your employees can learn many other things at this university, policies, rules, techniques, but the main focus should be a presentation of internal best practices. Remember, this university can be as flexible, informal, and brief as the size and complexity of your organization requires. The important thing is to learn from your best in a disciplined way. D. Teach the language of great managers. Language affects thinking. Thinking affects behavior. Companies must change how people speak if they are to change how people behave. Strong companies turn the language of great managers into the common language. Teach the four keys of great managers. In particular, emphasize the difference among skills, knowledge, and talents. Make sure people know that all roles performed at excellence require talent, that a talent is any recurring pattern of thought, feeling, or behavior, and that talents are extraordinarily difficult to teach. Change recruiting practices, job descriptions, and resume qualifications to reflect the critical importance and the broader definition of talent. Revise all training content to reflect the differences among skills, knowledge, and talents. A great company is clear about what can be trained and what cannot. Remove the remedial element from training. Send your most talented people to learn new skills and knowledge that can complement their talents. Stop sending less talented people to training classes to be fixed. Give every employee the benefit of feedback. Know that 360-degree surveys, personality profiles, and performance appraisal systems are all useful as long as they are focused on helping the person understand himself better and build upon his strengths. Stop using them if they are focused on identifying what needs to be fixed. Start the great manager's performance management routine. These master keys, although not a substitute for great managers, are a valuable companion. Left unturned, they allow conventional wisdom to create a climate hostile to great managers. With every policy, system, and language built around its core assumptions, conventional wisdom drowns out the small voices of dissent and forces each great manager to question even her most fervently held beliefs. In a climate like this, great managers cannot grow. They cannot refine their intuitions with practice. They are too busy trying to stay clear-headed and to survive. However, when turned successfully, these master keys alter the whole company climate. The climate becomes supportive to great managers, reinforcing their insights and pushing them to practice and to experiment and to refine. In this climate, great managers will thrive. Employees will excel. The company will sustain its growth. And conventional wisdom will be uprooted once and for all. Gathering force. Great managers make it all seem so simple. Just select for talent, define the right outcomes, focus on strengths, and then, as each person grows, encourage him or her to find the right fit. Complete these few steps with every single employee, and your department, division, or company will yield perennial excellence. It sounds almost inevitable. We know, just as you do, that it isn't. It is very hard to manage others well. The essence of the role is the struggle to balance the competing interests of the company, the customers, the employees, and even your own. You attend to one, and you invariably upset the others. If you have just intervened between a rude customer and a stammering employee, it is hard to find the right words to placate the customer and yet save face for the employee. If you have just assumed responsibility for a team of 30 jaded veterans, it is hard to know how to gain their trust while still pushing them to perform. If you've just realized that the new employee whom you so carefully selected does not, in fact, have the talent to perform, it is hard to know how to break the news without demoralizing him and alarming his colleagues. No matter which way you spin it, it's hard being the middleman. This book doesn't offer to make your role easy. It simply offers you a vantage point. It offers you a way to gain a clearer perspective on what you are doing, why you are doing it, and how to do it better. This perspective won't tell you what to do in every situation, but it will guide you toward sound action. It will help you know how to start laying the foundations for an enduringly strong workplace. We cannot promise miracles overnight, and you wouldn't believe us if we did. You know that at work tomorrow you are going to see a lot of people cast in the wrong roles. You know that you are going to see many managers marching in lockstep with conventional wisdom. And you know the limits of what you can change on your own. You know that you will only be able to change things one employee at a time, conversation by conversation. Like all great managers, you are at the start of a long journey. We can only promise that these four keys are an extraordinarily powerful beginning. On your journey, take strength from this. As you chip away at conventional wisdom, you are being aided by the gathering of two powerful forces. The needs of the company and the needs of the employee, misaligned since the birth of the corporation 150 years ago, are slowly beginning to converge. Today, you, the manager, find yourself at their meeting point. Everywhere, employees are demanding more of their work. With the breakdown of other sources of community, employees are looking more and more to their workplace to provide them with a sense of meaning and identity. They want to be recognized as individuals. They want a chance to express themselves and to gain meaningful prestige for that expression. Only you, the manager, can create the kind of environment where each person comes to know his or her strengths and expresses them productively. At the same time, companies are searching for undiscovered reserves of value. Human nature is one of those last vast reserves of value. If they are to increase their value, companies know they must tap these reserves. In the past, they have tried to access the power of human nature by containing it and perfecting it, just as mankind has done with the other forces of nature. We now know why this cannot work. The power of human nature is that, unlike other forces of nature, it is not uniform. Instead, its power lies in its idiosyncrasy, in the fact that each human's nature is different. If companies want to use this power, they must find a mechanism to unleash each human's nature, not contain it. You, the manager, are the best mechanism they have. The intersection of these two forces, each company's search for value and each individual's search for identity, will change the corporate landscape forever. You will see new organizational models, new titles, new compensation schemes, new careers, and new measurement systems, all designed around the mantra, "Don't try to put in what was left out, try to draw out what was left in." Some managers may try to resist these forces of change, but they will fail. A company's search for value is as unending and as irresistible as an individual's search for identity. You can slow these gathering forces down, you cannot stop them. But you can speed them up. You can be the catalyst. The world's best managers have shown you how. Appendices. Appendix A. The Gallup Path to Business Performance. Appendix B. What the Great Managers Said. Appendix C. A Selection of Talents. Appendix D. Finding the 12 Questions. Appendix E. The Meta-Analysis. Appendix A. The Gallup Path to Business Performance. What is the path to sustained increase in shareholder value? Through research examining the linkages between key elements of a healthy business, the Gallup organization has developed a model that describes the path between the individual contribution of every employee and the ultimate business outcome of any company, an increase in overall company value. For publicly traded companies, this is, of course, best measured by increase in stock price and market valuation. Here is a schematic of the path. First, identify strengths, which leads to the right fit, leading to great managers, followed by a strong affirmation of all of the 12 questions described in Chapter 1, which then leads to engaged employees, leading to loyal customers, driving sustainable growth, bringing about real profit increase, and resulting in stock increase. A brief overview of each step along the path follows. Real profit increase drives stock increase. Many variables influence the market value of a company, including external variables beyond a company's control. But of the variables a company can control, real profit increase is the most important driver of stock increase. We emphasize real because there are many maneuvers a company can take to drive short-term profitability. Some are solid operational initiatives, such as improving process efficiency or cutting costs. Others are generously described as creative accounting, such as write-downs, aggressive one-time charges, or forcing orders for products at the end of period to overstate revenue. However, only sustained profit increased from normal operations can drive a sustained increase in stock value. Sustainable growth drives real profit increase. Real profit increase can only be driven by sustainable growth. Sustainable growth is quite different from bought growth. A company can buy growth through a variety of techniques: acquiring another company's revenue stream, slashing prices, or a perennial favorite among fast-growing restaurant or retail chains, opening as many new locations as possible as quickly as possible. All of these techniques create a welcome spike in your revenue, but none of them addresses the issue of sustaining that revenue. In fact, some of them actively undermine it. Sustainable growth is not measured by a short-lived revenue spike. Rather, sustainable growth is measured by metrics such as revenue per store or revenue per product or number of services used per customer. These metrics reveal whether or not your revenue stream is robust, whether it will last. Loyal customers drive sustainable growth. The most critical driver of sustainable growth is an expanding base of loyal customers. In some industries, it is also critical to have a growing base of loyal customers who are willing to pay a premium price. It is even better if these loyal customers become advocates, thereby creating a large, vocal, and unpaid sales force. Customers can be persuaded to try a product or service through effective sales and marketing communications, but true customer loyalty can be created only by treating customers to a superior product and superior service. At Gallup, we refer to the sales and marketing communications as the brand promise and the quality of the products and services as the brand experience. A company will be able to create a growing number of loyal customers only if its brand experience matches or exceeds its brand promise. Engaged employees drive customer loyalty. Jack Welch, the CEO of General Electric, once said, "Any company trying to compete must figure out a way to engage the mind of every employee." This is especially true in service industries, where nearly all of the company's value is delivered to customers by individual employees. But even in pure manufacturing environments, quality products are unlikely to be produced without engaged and committed employees. A fully engaged employee, by our definition, is one who can answer with a strong affirmative to all 12 of those questions described in Chapter 1. Remember, the four outcome measures we used in our meta-analysis at the business unit level were employee retention, productivity, customer satisfaction, and profitability. While the schematic only illustrates the link between engaged employees and customer loyalty, there are often very direct links between an increase in the number of engaged employees and profit, either indirectly through an increase in productivity or directly through major decreases in employee turnover. The right people in the right roles, with the right managers, drive employee engagement. At the entry point of the path, the first steps must be performed almost perfectly, or the remaining linkages to customer satisfaction, revenue growth, and profit will not occur. First, you must identify the employee's individual strengths. In step two, you must position that individual to perform a role that capitalizes on these strengths. Failure to meet these two requirements cannot be corrected by either the employee's motivation or by expert coaching. As this book describes in some detail, when we refer to strengths, we are referring primarily to a person's recurring patterns of thought, feeling, or behavior, his talents, and less to learned skills and acquired knowledge. We believe that when selecting employees, companies have spent far too much time and money focusing on the skills and knowledge of employees and not nearly enough on their talents. Truth be told, most companies trip themselves up right at the start of this path because they have no accurate way of knowing how much talent they are bringing in, nor how well that talent is positioned. Having successfully taken these first two steps, you arrive at the path's most critical juncture. You must find a way to engage these talented employees. Again, there are many ways to do this. Pay them more, provide more generous benefits, but these are low-character solutions. The only way to engage talented employees successfully is to select great managers and then provide these managers with a climate friendly to the four keys. In this climate, great managers can select the best people, set accurate expectations for them, motivate them, and develop them. every single employee's talent will be released into customer-focused performance. The company will become strong. The company that is unable to take this step will be forced off the path. They will lose more talented people than they keep. They will miscast, overpromote, undervalue, and otherwise misuse those talented employees who do stay. Lacking talented people in the right roles, this company will have to revert to less robust routes to performance, an over-reliance on marketing, an unquestioned fondness for acquisition, a frantic push for bought growth. Pressed by high-character competition, these routes will serve this company poorly. And in the end, lacking great managers to keep it on the right path, this company will lose. Appendix B. What the Great Manager Said. What did great managers say to the three questions quoted in Chapter 2? As a manager, which would you rather have, an independent, aggressive person who produced $1.2 million in sales, or a congenial team player who produced about half as much? Please explain your choice. Great managers replied that they would prefer an independent, aggressive person rather than the half-as-productive team player. They reasoned that the independent, aggressive person was probably more talented but harder to manage. The team player was probably less talented for the role, but much easier to manage. Great managers are not looking for people who are easy to manage. They are looking for people who have the talent needed to be world-class. Therefore, they prefer the challenge of taking a talented person and focusing him or her toward productivity to the challenge of trying to make a less productive person talented. You have an extremely productive employee who consistently fouls up the paperwork. How would you work with this person to help him or her be more productive? Great managers would find out why this employee is fouling up the paperwork. Perhaps she is new to the role. Perhaps she could benefit from some training. But if they find out that the problem is lack of talent for paperwork, they will work to find a solution that enables the employee to manage around her weakness for administration and focus on her productivity instead. You have two managers. One has the best talent for management you have ever seen. The other is mediocre. There are two openings available. The first is a high-performing territory. The second is a territory that is struggling. Neither territory has yet reached its potential. Where would you recommend the excellent manager be placed? Why? Great managers would always place the most talented manager in the higher-performing territory. The key phrase in the question is, neither territory has yet reached its potential. Great managers use excellence as their measure. They know that only the talented manager working in the higher-performing territory has a chance to help that territory reach its true potential. Taking that territory to excellence is just as much of a challenge for the talented manager as is moving the struggling territory up above average. Furthermore, the former is much more fun and much more productive. With the talented manager positioned in the higher-performing territory, great managers say they would then remove the poor manager and select a talented turnaround expert to fix the lower-performing territory. To those who would do the opposite, great managers offer this cautionary word. Your less talented manager will never make the most of the higher-performing territory, and the lower-performing territory may well defeat your talented manager. In this case, with the best of intentions, you have set up two people to fail and halved your productivity. Appendix C. A selection of talents. Which talents are found most frequently across all roles? During our research, Gallup has had the opportunity to study excellence in hundreds of distinct roles. The talents needed to excel in these roles vary greatly. But in response to requests from managers, we list here the most commonly found talents with a short definition of each. You can use these definitions to guide your thinking as you decide which talents you should be selecting for. Striving talents. Achiever. A drive that is internal, constant, and self-imposed. Kinesthetic. A need to expend physical energy. Stamina. Capacity for physical endurance. Competition. A need to gauge your success comparatively. Desire. A need to claim significance through independence, excellence, risk, and recognition. Competence. A need for expertise or mastery. Belief. A need to orient your life around certain prevailing values. Mission. A drive to put your beliefs into action. Service. A drive to be of service to others. Ethics. a clear understanding of right and wrong, which guides your actions. Vision, a drive to paint value-based word pictures about the future. Thinking talents, focus, an ability to set goals and to use them every day to guide actions. Discipline, a need to impose structure onto life and work. Arranger, an ability to orchestrate. Work orientation, a need to mentally rehearse and review. Gestalt, a need to see order and accuracy. Responsibility, a need to assume personal accountability for your work. Concept, an ability to develop a framework by which to make sense of things. Performance orientation, a need to be objective and to measure performance. Strategic thinking, an ability to play out alternative scenarios in the future. Business thinking, the financial application of the strategic thinking talent. Problem solving, an ability to think things through with incomplete data. Formulation, an ability to find coherent patterns within incoherent data sets. Numerical, an affinity for numbers. Creativity, an ability to break existing configurations in favor of more effective or appealing ones. Relating talents. Woo, a need to gain the approval of others. Empathy, an ability to identify the feelings and perspectives of others. Relator, a need to build bonds that last. Multi-relator, an ability to build an extensive network of acquaintances. Interpersonal, an ability to purposely capitalize upon relationships. Individualized perception, an awareness of and attentiveness to individual differences. Developer, a need to invest in others and to derive satisfaction in so doing. Stimulator, an ability to create enthusiasm and drama. Team, a need to build feelings of mutual support. Positivity, a need to look on the bright side. Persuasion, an ability to persuade others logically. Command, an ability to take charge. Activator, an impatience to move others to action. Courage, an ability to use emotion to overcome resistance. Appendix D, Finding the 12 Questions. How did Gallup find the 12 questions? We began with focus groups. Each focus group included employees from each company's most productive departments. An occupational psychologist from Gallup conducted the groups, asking open-ended questions about the workplace. Each focus group was tape-recorded. Over the last 25 years, Gallup has conducted thousands of such focus groups. From these focus groups, we developed lengthy surveys, including questions on all aspects of the employees' work experiences. These surveys were administered to over 1 million employees. After each study, we performed analyses to identify the factors within the data. 5 factors consistently emerged. 1. Work environment and procedures. This factor addressed issues relating to the physical work environment, issues such as safety, cleanliness, pay, benefits, and policies. 2. Immediate supervisor. This factor addressed issues relating to the behavior of the employee's immediate supervisor, issues such as selection, recognition, development, trust, understanding, and discipline. 3. Team or co-workers. This factor addressed issues relating to the employee's perceptions of team members, issues such as cooperation, shared goals, communication, and trust. 4. Overall company or senior management. This factor addressed issues relating to company initiatives and leaders, issues such as the employee's faith in the company's mission and strategy, or in the competence of the leaders themselves. 5. Individual commitment or service intention. This factor addressed issues relating to the employee's sense of their own commitment to the company and to the customers, issues such as the employee's pride in the company, likelihood to recommend the company to friends as a place to work, likelihood to stay with the company for their whole career, and desire to provide excellent service to customers. Although other subfactors were found, subfactors like communication or development, these 5 major factors explain virtually all of the variance in the data. And of the 5 major factors, by far the most powerful is the immediate supervisor factor. It explains a disproportionately large percentage of the variance in the data. Following this factor analysis, we performed various regression analyses on the data to identify some of the most powerful questions within the data set. During these analyses, three dependent variables were used: rating of overall satisfaction, the five best questions from the individual commitment factor, and the performance outcomes of the business units. Before selecting the final list of 12 questions, we added a final criterion. The questions had to be simple and easy to affect. They had to be actionable questions, not emotional outcome questions like, overall, how satisfied are you with your work environment? Or, are you proud to be working for your company? Having identified the 12 most powerful questions, we then subjected them to rigorous confirmatory analyses. The meta-analysis presented in the book was one such study. In the next section, we will describe it in detail. Appendix E, the meta-analysis. What are the details of the meta-analysis? An excerpt from A Meta-Analysis and Utility Analysis of the Relationship Between Core Employee Opinions and Business Outcomes, prepared by James K. Harder, Ph.D., Amy Kreglow, M.S. Background to the core items. Over the course of the last 25 years, Gallup researchers have qualitatively and quantitatively assessed the most salient employee perceptions of management practices. In addition to designing customized surveys for nearly every organization with which Gallup works, Gallup researchers have sought to define a core set of statements that measure important perceptions across a wide spectrum of organizations. They have also tried to do so in a way that is not overly complicated or cumbersome for business professionals who are already deluged with other business-related responsibilities. Researchers with the Gallup organization have conducted thousands of qualitative focus groups across a wide variety of industries. The methodology underlying this research has been centered on the study of success. The Gallup organization has studied productive work groups and productive individuals for more than 25 years. In developing measures of employee perceptions, researchers have focused on the consistently important human resource issues on which managers can develop specific action plans. The 13 core statements evolved from a number of qualitative and quantitative studies. The quantitative data have been combined in the current meta-analysis. The 13 core statements are as follows. 1. Overall satisfaction. On a 5-point scale, where 5 is extremely satisfied and 1 is extremely dissatisfied, how satisfied are you with, name of company, as a place to work? 2. I know what is expected of me at work. 3. I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right. 4. At work, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. 5. In the last 7 days, I have received recognition or praise for doing good work. 6. My supervisor or someone at work seems to care about me as a person. 7. There is someone at work who encourages my development. 8. At work, my opinions seem to count. 9. The mission or purpose of my company makes me feel my job is important. 10. My associates, fellow employees, are committed to doing quality work. 11. I have a best friend at work. 12. In the last 6 months, someone at work has talked to me about my progress. 13. This last year, I have had opportunities at work to learn and grow. Meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is a statistical integration of data accumulated across many different studies. As such, it provides uniquely powerful information because it controls for measurement and sampling errors and other idiosyncrasies that distort the results of individual studies. A meta-analysis eliminates biases and provides an estimate of true validity or true relationship between two or more variables. Statistics typically calculated during meta-analyses also allow the researcher to explore the presence, or lack thereof, of moderators of relationships. More than 1,000 meta-analyses have been conducted in the psychological, educational, behavioral, medical, and personnel selection fields. The research literature in the behavioral and social sciences includes a multitude of individual studies with apparently conflicting conclusions. Meta-analysis, however, allows the researcher to estimate the mean relationship between variables and make corrections for artifactual sources of variation and findings across studies. It provides a method by which researchers can ascertain whether validities and relationships generalize across various situations, e.g. across firms or geographical locations. This paper will not provide a full review of meta-analysis. Rather, the authors encourage readers to consult the following sources for both background information and detailed descriptions of the more recent meta-analytic methods: Schmidt, 1992, Hunter and Schmidt, 1990, Lipsy and Wilson, 1993, Bangert-Drowns, 1986, and Schmidt, Hunter, Perlman, and Rothstein-Hirsch, 1985. Hypothesis and study characteristics. The hypotheses examined for this meta-analysis were as follows. 1. Employee perceptions of quality of management practices, measured by the 13 core items, are related to business unit outcomes, i.e., units with higher scores on these items have in general more favorable business outcomes. 2. The validity of employee perceptions of quality of management practices measured by the 13 core items generalizes across the organizations studied. A total of 28 studies are included in Gallup's database, studies conducted as proprietary research for various organizations. In each study, one or more of the core items were used, and data were aggregated at the business unit level and correlated with aggregate performance measures: customer satisfaction or loyalty, profitability, productivity, turnover. That is, in these analyses, the unit of analysis was the business unit, not the individual employee. Pearson correlations were calculated, estimating the relationship of business unit average measures of employee perceptions to each of these four general business outcomes. Correlations were calculated across business units within each company, and these correlation coefficients were entered into a database for each of the 13 items. The researchers then calculated mean validities, standard deviations of validities, and validity generalization statistics for each item for each of the four business unit outcome measures. Here is a summary of the studies composing this meta-analytic study. There were 18 studies that examined the relationship between business unit employee perceptions and customer perceptions. Customer perceptions included customer satisfaction scores, patient satisfaction scores, student ratings of teachers, and quality ratings by those posing as customers, mystery shoppers. Customer instruments varied from study to study. The general index of customer satisfaction or loyalty was an average score of the items included in each measure. Profitability measures were available for 14 studies. Definition of profitability typically was a percentage profit of revenue, sales. In several companies, the researchers used as the best measure of profit a difference score from the prior year or a difference from a budgeted amount because it represented a more accurate measure of each unit's relative performance. As such, a control for opportunity was used when profitability figures were deemed less comparable from one unit to the next. For example, a difference variable involved dividing profit by revenue for a business unit and then subtracting a budgeted percentage from this percentage. In every case, profitability variables were measures of margin, and productivity variables were measures of amount produced. 15 studies included measures of productivity. Measures of business unit productivity consisted of either revenue figures, revenue per person figures, revenue per patient, or a managerial evaluation, which was based on all available productivity measures and management judgment as to which business units were most productive. In many cases, this was a dichotomous variable. Top-performing business units equals 2, less successful units equals 1. Turnover data were available for 15 studies. These studies consisted of the annualized percentage of employee turnover for each business unit. The overall study involved 105,680 individual employee responses to surveys and 2,528 business units, an average of 42 employees per business unit and 90 business units per company. Here is a summary of studies per company sorted by industry and type of business unit. 28% of all business units in this meta-analysis were from financial organizations, 21% were from healthcare business units, and 18% were from restaurants. The remaining industries included in the meta-analysis were entertainment, grocery, research, telecommunications, publishing, medical sales, electronics, hospitality, government, and education. 31% of all business units were retail operations and 28% were financial organizations, 21% were healthcare units, 9% were education units, and 11% were other businesses. There is considerable variation among companies in the extent to which employee perception data and business performance data can be aggregated at enough levels to provide comparable analyses. Retail businesses and financial organizations provide numerous opportunities for this type of analysis, as they typically include a large number of business units that use similar measures. Meta-analytic methods used. Analyses included weighted average estimates of true validity, estimates of standard deviation of validities, and corrections made for sampling error and measurement error in the dependent variables for these validities. The most basic form of meta-analysis corrects variance estimates only for sampling error. Other corrections recommended by Hunter and Schmidt, 1990, include correction for measurement artifacts, such as range restriction and measurement error in the performance variables gathered. The definitions of the above procedures are provided in the sections that follow. For this study, the researchers gathered performance variable data for multiple time periods to calculate the reliabilities of the business performance measures. Since these multiple measures were not available for each study, the researchers utilized artifact distributions, meta-analysis methods, Hunter and Schmidt, 1990, pages 158 to 197, to correct for measurement error in the performance variables. The artifact distributions developed were based on annual test-retest reliabilities, where they were available, from various studies. At the time of the study, there were no population estimates of standard deviations of items for each of the scale types used. Therefore, no corrections for range restriction were made. Similarly, no corrections were made for measurement error in independent measures, the 13 core items. To adequately correct for item-level independent variable measurement error, test-retest reliabilities with a short time interval would be necessary. Such estimates were unavailable at the time of this study. For composite dimensions provided later in the report, true score correlation estimates were calculated by using Cronbach's alpha estimates for independent variable reliability values. As noted, no corrections were made in the item validities or variances due to measurement error in the independent variables and for range restriction. The following item analyses should therefore be considered conservative estimates, and estimates of true variance should be considered as slightly larger than actual true variance. In any given meta-analysis, there may be several artifacts for which artifact information is only sporadically available. For example, suppose measurement error and range restriction are the only relevant artifacts beyond sampling error. In such a case, the typical artifact distribution-based meta-analysis is conducted in three stages. First, information is compiled on four distributions: the distribution of the observed correlations, the distribution of the reliability of the independent variable, the distribution of the reliability of the dependent variable, and the distribution of the range departure. There are then four means and four variances compiled from the set of studies, with each study providing whatever information it contains. Second, the distribution of correlations is corrected for sampling error. Third, the distribution corrected for sampling error is then corrected for error of measurement and range variation. Hunter and Schmidt, 1990, pages 158 to 159. In this study, corrections for measurement error in the dependent variable were made in all analyses. The meta-analysis for each item and each performance variable includes an estimate of the mean sample size weighted validity and the variance across the correlations, again weighting each validity by its sample size. The amount of variance predicted for weighted correlations on the basis of sampling error was also computed. One rule of thumb adopted from the literature is that if over 75% of variance in validities across studies is due to sampling error and other artifacts, the validity is assumed generalizable. Since two measurement error artifacts could not be corrected for in this study, the researchers chose to use a figure of 70% or more in determining whether validities generalized across organizations. Results. Here is a summary of the meta-analysis for each of the 13 core items with regard to customer satisfaction loyalty criteria. Statistics included the number of business units contained in the analysis, the number of correlations, the weighted mean observed correlation, the observed standard deviation, the true validity standard deviation, subtracting out variance due to sampling error and measurement error in the performance variables, the percent variance due to sampling error, the percent variance accounted for, and the 90% credibility value, the point above which 90% of the true validities fall. Results indicate that across all 13 items, true validity estimates are in the positive direction. Validity estimates range from a low of 0.057 to a high of 0.191. If an item had a positive 90% credibility value, it was considered generalizable in the sense that we are confident the true validity is positive in the hypothesized direction. Items in which over 70% of the variance in validities was accounted for were considered generalizable in the sense that the validity did not vary across studies. 11 of the 13 items had positive 90% credibility values, and 6 did not vary across studies. Interestingly, for item number 12, in the last 6 months, someone at work has talked to me about my progress. The calculations indicate 148% of the variance in validities across studies is due to sampling error. The interpretation of this is, by chance, there was less variability across studies in this data set in the observed correlations than predicted from random sampling error, based on the number of business units in each study, and dependent variable measurement error. Two other items also had over 100% of variance accounted for due to sampling error alone. The practical significance of the size of correlations depicted here will be discussed following the results section. For item validities that did not appear to generalize across companies, it is possible that there are other variables moderating the strength of the relationship of these employee perceptions to customer satisfaction. For instance, perhaps the moderator for opinions count is the extent to which the manager not only listens to the employee's opinions, but also uses them to affect the customer. Items with highest true validities that appear to generalize across companies include, I have a best friend at work, at work, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day, I know what is expected of me at work, my supervisor or someone at work seems to care about me as a person. When multiple generalizability estimates are derived, second-order sampling error can slightly influence results. On average, 66.96% of variance was accounted for across item validities to customer satisfaction criteria. While the mean true validity is clearly positive, the strength of the relationship may be moderated slightly by one or more other variables. It is important to remind the reader that these estimates have not yet been corrected for other artifacts, such as measurement error in the independent variable and range restriction. Once they have been corrected for other artifacts, it is likely that there will be little room left for detecting substantial moderating relationships. Here is the same summary analysis for items with regard to the relationship to profitability criteria. 10 of the 13 items have positive 90% credibility values, and it is possible to account for over 70% of the variance in validities for 9 items. The mean percent variance accounted for across items is 69.21%. Again, there is some room, although little, for possible moderating relationships. Those that may not generalize include talked about progress, mission, materials and equipment, and best friend. Approximately half of the variance in validities for these items is explained by sampling error and measurement error in the dependent variable. Items that appear to generalize across companies and that tended to have the highest validities to the profitability criteria are overall satisfaction, my associates, fellow employees, are committed to doing quality work, at work I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day, my supervisor or someone at work seems to care about me as a person. Here is a summary of the meta-analytic and validity generalization statistics for the 13 core items relative to productivity criteria. Again, the relationships were positive. All 90% credibility values were positive, and we were able to account for over 70% of the variance in validities for 11 items. The mean percent variance accounted for across items is 83.72%, suggesting very little room for possible moderators. There was variation, however, in the magnitude of true validity estimates across items. Those with highest validity estimates to productivity criteria were, I know what is expected of me at work my opinions seem to count, the mission or purpose of my company makes me feel my job is important, overall satisfaction, my associates, fellow employees, are committed to doing quality work. Finally, here is a summary of the meta-analytic and validity generalization statistics for items as they relate to turnover. 4 items had negative 90% credibility values and 2 were approximately 0. Therefore, for 6 items, we can be quite certain the direction of the relationship is negative, as hypothesized for turnover. We were able to account for over 70% of the variance in validities for 10 items. The mean percent variance accounted for across items is 91.96%, again suggesting very little room for moderators. Interestingly, one of the highest true validity estimates was item number 3. I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right. Employee perceptions with regard to this item, as they relate to turnover, do not vary substantially across companies. Items with the highest negative correlations that appear to generalize across companies included, I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right, overall satisfaction, my supervisor or someone at work seems to care about me as a person. Table 1 now provides a summary of all item statistics calculated for each of the 4 general performance criterion measures included in the study. This table presents the mean number of studies per variable, the mean number of business units across items, the mean observed correlation per item, and the mean true validity. In general, items correlated at a similar magnitude with customer, profitability, and productivity criteria, and at a lower level with turnover. Table 1. Summary of item statistics. Criterion measure. Customer. Number of studies, 18. Mean number of business units, 2,170. Mean observed correlations, 0.107. Mean true validity correlations, 0.122. Criterion measure profitability, number of studies, 14. Mean number of business units, 1,490. Mean observed correlations, 0.084. Mean true validity correlations, 0.133. Criterion measure productivity, number of studies, 15. Mean number of business units, 1,148. Mean observed correlations, 0.126. Mean true validity correlations, 0.128. Criterion measure turnover, number of studies, 15. Mean number of business units, 1,552. Mean observed correlations, -0.023. Mean true validity correlations, -0.045. Of the correlations included in these analyses, the average meta-analytic correlation was 0.107. The practical utility of the magnitude of these correlations is discussed later in Harder and Kreglow, 1998. Table 2. Items with meta-analytic correlations that are generalizable across organizations. Table 2 provides a summary of the items that had positive 90% credibility values, 0 or negative for the turnover measure, and in which over 70% of the variance in validities was accounted for. 6 items fit this criterion with regard to customer satisfaction. They are number 2, know what is expected, number 4, opportunity to do what I do best, number 5, recognition or praise, number 6, cares about me, number 11, best friend, and number 12, talked about progress. 9 items fit this criterion for profitability outcomes, and they are number 1, overall satisfaction, number 2, know what is expected, number 4, opportunity to do what I do best, number 5, recognition or praise, number 6, cares about me, number 7, encourages development, number 8, opinions count, number 10, committed to quality, and number 13, opportunities to learn and grow. 11 items fit this criterion for productivity outcomes, and they are number 1, overall satisfaction, number 2, know what is expected, number 3, materials or equipment, number 5, recognition or praise, number 6, cares about me, number 7, encourages development, number 8, opinions count, number 9, mission or purpose, number 10, committed to quality, number 11, best friend, number 12, talked about progress. 5 of the 13 items met this criterion with regard to turnover, and they are number 1, overall satisfaction, number 2, know what is expected, number 3, materials or equipment, number 4, opportunity to do what I do best, and number 6, cares about me. Computation of dimension correlations. Items were combined into 4 frequently used theoretical constructs taught by the Gallup School of Management. Basecamp, what do I get? Item 2, know what is expected. Item 3, materials or equipment. Camp 1, what do I give? Item 4, opportunity to do what I do best. Item 5, recognition or praise. Item 6, cares about me. Item 7, encourages development. Camp 2, Do I Belong? Item 8, Opinions Count. Item 9, Mission or Purpose. Item 10, Committed to Quality. Item 11, Best Friend. Camp 3, How Can We Grow? Item 12, Talked About Progress. Item 13, Opportunities to Learn and Grow. The reliabilities of the above composite dimensions are reviewed in Harder, 1998. Reliability estimates of the above dimensions and the sum of the 12 items, all except overall satisfaction, were used to correct for independent variable measurement error. In estimating composite dimension correlations with criteria, a distribution of inter-item correlations was compiled at the aggregate business unit level and combined across 12 studies. While the majority of the 12 items were included in most of the studies, the number of items included varied from study to study. For this reason, item statistics were calculated and the meta-analytic estimates of items were used to compute composite dimension correlations with various criteria. Since both yes, no, don't know scales and 1-to-5-point Likert scales were used interchangeably across studies, the researchers calculated weighted average inter-item correlations based on the proportion of yes, no, don't know and 1-to-5-point scales used. For the overall sample of studies, 19 studies used a 1-to-5-point scale and 9 used a yes, no, don't know scale. The weighted average inter-item correlations based on the above overall study proportions are provided in Appendix B. Inter-item correlations were needed for the composite score estimation, Hunter and Schmidt, 1990, page 455. For the sum of the 12 items, the true score correlation is 0.19 to customer satisfaction loyalty, profitability, and productivity criteria. For true score correlations, the denominator becomes the square root of the dependent variable reliability multiplied by the square root of the independent variable reliability. The true score correlation is negative to turnover, but at a lesser magnitude. The dimension correlated highest with turnover is base camp. As such, business units with employees who indicate they know what is expected of them and have the materials and equipment to do their work right tended to have lower turnover in comparison to other business units. The dimension most highly correlated with profitability was Camp 1. Dimensions most highly related to customer satisfaction loyalty outcomes were Base Camp and Camp 2. Camp 3 was least highly correlated with business outcomes, although it was positively related to customer satisfaction, profitability, and productivity. For more detail on these and other discoveries, please see the report, A Meta-Analysis and Utility Analysis of the Relationship Between Core Employee Perceptions and Business Outcomes, prepared by Dr. Jim Harder and Amy Craiglow, available from our world headquarters at 47 Holfish Street, Princeton, New Jersey. The excerpt above was written in 1998. The report is updated every year with the latest discoveries from Gallup's research.
The End. You've been listening to First Break All the Rules by Marcus Buckingham and Kurt Kaufman, narrated by Richard Rohan. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends the sequel, Now Discover Your Strengths, also by Marcus Buckingham and Kurt Kaufman, and narrated by Richard Rohan. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So to order another Recorded Book, or for a copy of our latest listing, please call us using the toll-free number found on the back of the book. You can order by phone with any major credit card, or by writing to us, or by faxing us. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. On our website, you can browse the catalog, hear about the latest releases, place orders, or tune into narrator profiles and author interviews, so visit us there at www.recordedbooks.com. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.